If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is a fellow Missourian, except he is from the opposite corner of the state as I am. And it's really interesting. I'm sure this is similar to a lot of different states where, like, you go to the Northwest versus the Northeast versus the Southwest or Southeast, Central. Like, you can get into very different types of animals, quantities, quality, all of it. And so I'm excited to talk to Nick because he's up near St. Louis and I am down near Springfield. And so we're going to talk all about his passion, his obsession, his addiction to hunting deer, waterfowl. I mean, just growing up in the outdoors and absolutely loving being out. This is my kind of guy. I'm super pumped about this. Now, I do want to let you know, it has been crazy here. I just did the most intense stalk of my life for, I can't say any animal because mountain goat hunting, I don't think you can really compare to mountain goat stalks as far as the physical aspect of it, but definitely the most intense stalk that I've done on an animal anywhere east of the Rocky Mountains, and it was for a turkey. Now, I'm going to share all of the details about it in a future turkey episode where me, my buddy Drew, and my buddy Austin all recap our 2022 seasons because it has been wild. And I've talked over and over about my addiction for turkey, not my addiction, my desire to go turkey hunting, my love-hate relationship with it. This year has made me more interested in turkey hunting, to say the least. And I might even say that I really like it now. I don't love it. It's not number one. I don't know that it will ever be number one, but it has been quite the year. And so I'm super pumped to share all of that with you guys. But before we do that, you're going to hear a lot of other good episodes in between now and our final episode recapping turkey season for 2022 here in Missouri. And in the meantime, let's hop on to the call with Nick.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys. So I know that last year was kind of a wild year for censorship for hunters and anglers, but that's why we've partnered with the social media platform Go Wild to combat mainstream social media censorship. Now, Go Wild is a free social community that was built by outdoors men and women just like me and you. Not only are your photos not censored on Go Wild, they're actually encouraged. And they give you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. And as you earn those points, you can unlock awesome rewards like gift cards, free swag, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Check this out, though. If you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. So go visit downloadgowild.com to get started. All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today, I've got another fellow Missourian. His name is Nick Hirschler, and he is... You're kind of in the opposite corner of Missouri from me.
Yeah, but
welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. What's it like being on that corner of Missouri and hunting? Because I feel like I get a lot of people in between where I'm at in Kansas City, but I don't know that I've ever had anyone from up near St. Louis.
It's definitely interesting. So we got a... When I'm at school up here in the city, we got to hammer the public land pretty hard. But when I get to go back home, which is about 45 minutes west outside of the city, we have a little more access to private ground. But public land hunting for anything always presents a new, whole new ballpark of challenges. So in a way, I feel like it makes me a better hunter, because when I get in less pressured areas, it definitely seems like things work out in my favor a little better. But there's always the trials and tribulations of never knowing who's going to be next to you. So,
oh yeah. Public land can be, it can be scary at times. I guess, why don't we jump into kind of what you're interested in the outdoors, if you wouldn't mind just sharing with the listeners, what are your main passions?
So I grew up mostly whitetail hunting, for the better part of my life, but I recently, I'd say in the last 8 or so years, have really gotten into waterfowl hunting. So that's become a real big passion of mine, but really kind of anything outdoors. I like to trout fish a lot, snag for spoonbill with some buddies from back home. So we just did that down at Lake of the Ozarks 2 weekends ago. But mostly just whitetail and waterfowl, but I'm not opposed to trying anything. So
that's awesome, man. I'm exactly the same way. Snagging spoonbill is something I haven't done yet. We had some friends in town this weekend, and he was asking about all the different fishing opportunities and stuff, because we did a fly fishing trip. And I was like, man, there's people who snag for spoonbill. They snagged, where were they? They were, I think he said he was up on the Kenai in mm-hmm. Alaska. And apparently there's a certain time of year where you can snag salmon. And I didn't know that. I thought all salmon were like, you had to have them hooked in the lip. But apparently there's like a certain season. Anyways, I showed him pictures of spoonbill, and his jaw hit the floor. He's like, people snag those and reel them in. I'm like, they do, man. It's a different breed. And I want to experience it at some point. I just haven't yet.
Yeah, it's a good time. So I got a buddy who his family does it quite a bit. And so he called me last Friday night and was like, we're pulling out for Lake of the Ozarks at midnight. We're going to be on the water by 3 a.m. if you want to roll with us. And so we got down and we ended up catching, we caught 5 fish, all of them over 50 pounds. So this
was pretty good.
We didn't catch anything that wasn't a keeper, but that was, I want to say they're up to like, in the 3 weeks of snagging season we've had, they've caught 18 to 20. Biggest fish was 87 pounds. So definitely been hammering them down on the lower part of the lake.
Dude, I need to get in. How long does snagging season go?
Till the end of April. So
So
only about 2 weeks left.
Dude, I need to get in touch with somebody because that's something I wanted to do this year. And I just, yeah. I've never done it. I've never like dug too far into it. And yeah. So I didn't know when season was. I knew it was sometime in the spring. I didn't realize it was already going on. So I'm going to have to try to get out and experience that at some point.
Yeah.
So you're big into waterfowl, into whitetail hunting. Interestingly enough, so we hunt Stockton Lake every now and then. Mm-hmm. We hunt Four Rivers every now and then. I mean, we kind of hunt all over the state of Missouri. But I read an article years ago. I think my buddy Brad actually brought it to me. And they had done a GPS deal on geese from the Mississippi River. They were up near St. Louis. Yeah. And every single day, they were flying down. And they were feeding at Four Rivers and then flying back to roost on the Mississippi. And I'm like, dude, that's crazy. Like, that's I feel like when I have to drive 5 miles to get a certain type of fast food that I want, like that's really inconvenient. But these birds were flying for a long ways just to feed in one spot. So it's possible that you and I have shot at the same goose before in two different parts.
Yeah, that's crazy. Especially because a lot of the ground that we hunt is along the Mississippi River, but I never would have thought that birds were flying that far just for feed.
Yeah, I need to try to find that article, or maybe I'll talk to Brad. I see him tomorrow. Maybe I'll find out if he can dig that up again, or I might have it saved in my phone. I don't know. What got you into the outdoors? Did you grow up in a hunting family?
Yeah, so I grew up mostly, you know, my dad, my grandpa hunted, fished on both sides. So my family, it's kind of tradition that when we turn 5, the boys in the family get BB guns. And so I'm the oldest of my family. So I have one younger brother and then I have 3 younger cousins. All of us have gotten BB guns at 5, pellet guns at 7, learned to shoot, learned to respect them. And then by, you know, 8, 9, 10, we're hunting squirrels running around the backyard, you know, doing whatever, rabbits. And then eventually we have all gotten out in the deer woods by this point. My youngest cousin is 6. He likes to come sit in the blind, but he didn't get to bring his own gun yet. So, but
I was just on a podcast with another guy and he was sharing with me. I don't know why. Maybe I never put it together. Maybe I never put too much thought into it, but the legal hunting age in Missouri is 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a son who's 5 right now and he will be 6 at the end of August. He turned 6. I'm terrible with dates. I'm terrible with names. I'm terrible with all the important information that I should remember. And I'm really good with stupid facts and jokes. But I've always remembered his birthday because the very next day is dove opener, sadly enough. But he can technically come out dove hunting legally and carry a gun, which
carry his own gun. Yeah.
That doesn't even make sense to me because he's so tiny and like, I thought he was years and years away from hunting, but I was telling my last guest that I will be putting in overtime this summer, just teaching him about firearms. He's got a BB gun. He's messed around with Nerf guns a ton. But I need to get him geared up because I would love to take him out and help him experience some of his first hunts this year.
Yeah. BB guns are always like a great kind of place to start. You know, it's just a good kind of learning tool. We all started with the iron sights and couldn't get the rule and joke kind of was, well, you can't upgrade your pellet gun until you can, you know, shoot real good with your iron sight. So it was a big deal when we could put 5 BBs in the bullseye, at, you know, 10 yards or whatever with that BB gun, but using iron sights, it's kind of a big deal. So.
Oh yeah. That's a totally different ball game. I mean, I know in, in Colorado, if you do like a muzzleloader tag for deer, I think it might be with for any species, you have to use iron sights. And I'm like, you don't realize like it, how much a powered or a magnified scope changes the game until you go back to trying to shoot iron sights.
And it's definitely a lost skill too. Like if you progress yourself out of it and then you don't practice it, you have to regress back to it. It's something that definitely takes people time to get used to again.
Oh yeah. I bought an AR this year. And I bought like the flip up iron sights to put on a 45. Mm-hmm. And even just going through from a 3-power like Vortex red dot to iron sights, it was a totally different ball game. Like trying to shoot through a little peep on the back to a post on the front with iron sights. Yeah. I was like, dude, I couldn't confidently hunt with this. Yeah. I mean, maybe out to 50 yards, but nothing past that probably.
Yeah.
So you're hunting a lot of public land. What is the flyway like being that close to the Mississippi? Cause I grew up hunting the Mississippi, but in Wisconsin. So, I was a couple states north and it was pretty killer. I'm not going to lie. The Mississippi flyway is amazing. If you hit the right spots, what's that been like up by where you're at?
So definitely have to put in your time to find the birds, figure out where they're at. We didn't have boat access until the end of the year. I just broke down like halfway through duck season. I was like, I'm tired of not being able to get to these spots I need to get to. Went and bought a 16-foot John boat for me and my buddies. But it's usually pretty good if you can find where they're at and if you're willing to put in the work to do it. So, before we had the boat, that was putting on waders, dragging a jet sled and 5 dozen decoys a mile and a half across land to go get back in some of these holes. But we would come out with 6 or 10 ducks when nobody else was wanting to hunt. It's kind of nice too, because we have Columbia Bottoms conservation area that's pretty close to us. And so a lot of mornings we would go there and try to draw in, but the river's close enough that if we wouldn't get drawn, we could take the boat and run over and jump on the river, or make that hike back to one of the timber holes. So you definitely have to put in the work and be willing to scout and put in your time to get there. But if you do, like you said, it definitely can be worth the reward for sure.
Yeah, the northern part of Missouri, and then when you get to the east border and the west border, they both seem like they carry a lot of birds.
Yeah.
We are trying to figure it out here. I feel like there's very few places, very few ponds that bring birds back year after year where we're at. And it's tough to get access to ones that haven't already been, claimed by somebody else.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about Missouri is you can drive an hour, 2 hours in any direction, and typically get into some pretty good waterfowl hunting.
Yeah.
When it comes to deer hunting, now, I think there's been new world records since, but for a long time, St. Louis County had the world record whitetail. Are you getting into big deer up there?
So I don't get to hunt in the county much. I definitely see a lot of big deer while I'm up here, but most of my deer hunting I go back home for. But we see a pretty good amount of big deer in the county. The problem with up here is, like you said, a lot of the ground has been claimed already. Everybody and their mom kind of deer hunts. It's a little bit easier to get some ground to waterfowl hunt in the city because there's not as many people that do it, so the farmers will let you slip into their cornfields, but a lot of them lease it out for deer if they don't hunt it themselves. So you kind of have to go public or go home, and there's not a ton of public land up in the city that's not on the draw system. So we've put in for the draw being up here at school, but never have been lucky enough to get it, so we go back home and hunt ground that we have back there.
Nice. Are you primarily rifle hunting, or are you archery hunting as well?
So I do a mix of both. I don't get to archery hunt quite as much as I would like, just because it's time that I have to get back home and then get out to the farm to go. But I definitely always make it back home for gun season, just because it's a big big ordeal. My whole family gets together for it and takes the campers out and whatnot. But I shot, I guess, not last season, but two seasons ago. I didn't kill a deer with my gun. I took my girlfriend out and let her get hers, but I shot two with my bow. One early in like October, and then one, we had a cold front coming the last day of season that was supposed to snow. And I told my brother, I said, we're going, because you watch, their deer are going to get up and move in the snow. And it was about 7:15 January 15th, and this silly little doe come walking out, and I was like, well, freezer's got room for one more, so you're dying today. And we smacked her on the last day of the season, and he couldn't believe it, because I told him, headed out to the farm that morning, I was like, I just got a feeling we're all gonna see deer this morning, because it was me, my brother, and my little cousin, and I was like, somebody's gonna kill one. And I texted him from the stand, we hadn't even been in that long, and both boys were like, there's no way, you already got one down. And I took pictures of it. I was like, yep, she's laying right there.
Dude, that's awesome. I love the variety of weather that you can hunt in here. And I mean, most places, archery season is long enough to where you still almost have some of the heat from summer. And then once you get into late season, like January, oh dude, it can get frigid out there. Yeah. And I love it. I think I would do away with the warm weather at the beginning if it meant I could have more cold weather at the end and extend it like even into February, because I hate sweating in the tree stand. That's the worst thing ever.
Yeah. If I had more opportunities to hunt snow, hunt the colder days, because I just seem to have better luck when it's cold, when the weather is nasty, when it's cold, when it's snowing, even a little bit of drizzle, when it's just 40 degrees and sprinkling, is way better than when it's 75 and sunny.
Oh yeah. I've had to bring out like in the early season, I'll bring out a light jacket for at night if I'm walking out, if the temperature is going to drop. Yeah. But I've found that bringing that out, no matter what, even if it's going to be nice all the way until I get back to the truck, like I put it in a branch above my head just as extra shade. Because dude, there have been times when I'm out there and I'm looking on my phone and it's like 91 degrees in September.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah. 91 degrees in September. And I'm like, why do I live here? This is terrible. I don't want it to be 91 degrees ever, much less when I'm trying to deer hunt.
And the worst part about it too, is I'll tell myself all summer, this year, I'll wait till October. I'm not going to go and fight the heat. And then sure enough, September 15th rolls around and I'm like, I haven't been in a tree stand in like 8 months. So yeah, I'm going. And then I sweat and I get mad. I'm like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? But can't kill the addiction.
No, I'll brave the cold any day.
Yeah.
But and I've never bought like one of those hard sided tower blinds before. I've made like a box blind, you know, like every guy has, if he's got extra plywood and 2x4s around. Now that's out of the question with the price of lumber lately, but I've never built one specifically to get out of the cold, but I could totally see myself building one and putting like a bunch of little battery powered fans in it or something just to get out of the heat in the early season.
For sure.
Are you like, when you do archery hunt, are you hunting from the ground? Are you doing a hang on or are you doing saddle? What's your preferred method?
Mostly ladder stand. So in the last couple of years, my family's gotten some ground, so it's a little easier to leave out permanent sets. So we've got, like 4 or 5 different ladder stands, two ground blinds, and then what we call the a deck stand, which is my parents wanted to put a new deck on our house. So my dad and I disassembled the old deck, took it apart and put it all in trailer, drove it out to the farm and reassembled the deck and ratchet strapped it to a tree. So we have a 12 by 14 platform in the middle of the woods, ratchet strapped to a tree with a staircase that goes up to it. And it might be the most redneck invention we've ever come up with, but it is beautiful to have a lawn chair and all the room you want. you can gun hunt off of it, or you can just sit in a lawn chair with your bow.
That's hilarious. I haven't done anything crazy redneck like that yet. I've thought about doing some stuff. I thought about getting like an old camper, and I found pallet racking online one time, and I was like, dude, I could totally go like pour some concrete footers, put pallet racking up, and then like throw an old camper up on top of it. I haven't done that yet. That'd be a little too redneck for me even. Yeah. But my mom actually, they've started doing that in Wisconsin. They'll build a deck platform out in the woods. And even if it's just like 4 or 5 feet off the ground, some of them are like 2 feet off the ground, like where it hits the hill. And then they'll be a few feet taller on the front side. Mm-hmm. And then they just put a pop-up blind on top of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, geez, that seems like, one, you're building a whole deck out there. Obviously, you guys had the leftover deck from when you tore it apart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, even just building a big deck seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then you're putting the pop-up blind on it. But I mean, if it works for them, it works, right?
Whatever works.
Yeah. I think, didn't Meat Eater do like a most redneck blind deal? Did you see that? They had like a contest where they had people send in like the most redneck deer stand or hunting blind or something like that. And there were some pretty oddball ones out there.
I bet. I've seen some crazy things for sure. I have a buddy who, his girlfriend's farm, they had just a bunch of old campers. Her dad kind of just collected cars and whatnot. And so they just have like, I think it's two or three campers just parked on the sides of different cow pastures. And they've been there for years. They all have Mr. Buddy heaters in them, and they go sit at the kitchen table, turn on the buddy heater, and wait for the deer to come by.
I feel like anytime you put a camper out in the woods, it's bound to have like hundreds of mice inside of it. And I don't know that I'd care for that, looking out for deer and just having mice all over the place. But I thought it would be really funny. We bought a school bus at one point, and we were going to renovate it into an RV.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, it'd be really awesome if I had the equipment to stand a school bus like on end, and then do a blind in the top part of it, a platform, and you climb up the inside. If you just had to climb up the seat backs all the way up to your blind, that might take the cake on that competition.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to start. I think this year I'm going to try to branch out more. I say this, we'll see if it actually happens, but I want to kind of try to branch out more and experience more public land hunting with my bow. I don't know that I'm ready to brave the Orange Army yet, but I think if I start with bow, that might be a good spot to get my feet wet.
Yeah. It's definitely some longer walks. It's a little easier during bow season because there's a little less hunting pressure, so you don't have to go quite as far to get away from everybody. But the more boots on the ground, the better. You know, there was lots of weekends that I was almost on the ground more than I was in the stand, just because we'd hunt the morning and then go scout out a new area, come back, take a quick shower, and go back in. So
how many days a year do you think you're getting out during deer season?
When I first started, this is one of my favorite funny facts to tell folks. My first year deer hunting, my dad was dedicated to him and I spending as much time together and in the woods as we can. And I think all together from September 15th to January 15th, when season closes, I only missed 6 weekends of season. And that was when we were hunting public land that was an hour and 50 minutes from my house. We were driving every weekend. My mom was not always about it, but also knew that it was a great time for my dad and I anymore. I mean, I'd say I still probably hunt 8 to 10 weekends out of the season, but I'm sprinkling waterfowl, especially if the deer hunting's not been crazy good. If I'm not seeing too much, then we're definitely heading to the duck blind instead, because my buddies and I enjoy doing that together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a bummer when you've got really good friends that are duck hunters and you love deer hunting and a cold front's coming through and they're like, dude, the weather's coming, it's going to push birds in. And you're like, it's also going to get deer on their feet. And then you have to
you have to always decide. Lately, I just have said screw it to duck hunting when I've got good deer hunting weather, because inevitably I'll go out and deer or in duck hunt with my buddies. We'll shoot like four ducks and be so pumped about it. Yeah. And then I'll come back and check my trail camera, and sure enough, I had a big buck walk through during daylight. Yeah. And I was concerned with shooting the meat equivalent of like the rib cage on a deer.
Yeah.
Where does it fall for you? Like what takes priority between deer and duck?
I would say this year it was definitely duck, and it's kind of starting to shift that way just because it's more social and I just kind of like to be around other people. I like my time in the deer woods to be alone and just me, but then there's also those days where you can't really beat, you know, being in the blind with good buddies. So
yeah, that I feel like duck hunting is a really good one to get first timers out for. You know, yeah, you're not worrying about your scent, you're not worrying about your sound, even movement until you have birds working. And, you know, you might flare a couple because you didn't notice they were coming in and you were screwing around. Or inevitably, anytime someone is going to take a pee, lighting a cigar, a cigarette, or anything, like, there are birds that will be dumping into your decoys when nobody's paying attention. But you just have to make sure it's the right duck hunt to get a first timer out on, because you could ruin them on duck hunting forever. If it's one of those miserable cold days where you don't see anything. But at the same time, I like when people have to earn their first bird. I don't like the easy hunts where they get out and they're like, oh dude, I don't know what the big deal is. Like, we limited out so quickly.
Yeah.
That's like the worst thing for a new person to experience. They might get hooked on it, but they've got a very bad representation of what it actually is.
Yeah. It's kind of like that too with all hunting in general. So last year I got my girlfriend out for her first Missouri deer season, and she kept joking about how it wasn't going to take any time and she'd shoot her first deer within the first hour and all this. And she's like, you spend all this time in the woods and blah, 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 whatever. Opening morning comes, and last year was cold and rainy, and I was like, these are not, you know, great conditions. At this point, I'm crossing my fingers we're seeing a deer, because I'm like, this is going to ruin it for her. She's never going to come back out here. I'll be darned if it wasn't within the first 40 minutes of first light. And I'm pretty sure that the guy on the neighboring property had just shot at a deer, because we heard a shot not too far off in the distance. And it wasn't 15 minutes, and here comes this deer trotting up in the field. And it was just a spike. But with first timers, I'm like, what, you know, whatever you want. I was honestly kind of dozing with the rain on the ground blind and everything. And she goes, there's a deer. And I was, you know, sit up and look around. And sure enough, he was coming. He walked right across the field. He come out like 40 yards, turned away from us and walked for a second. And we got her up on the gun and everything. And I was like, can you see him? She said, yeah, I got him. So we stopped him. She dropped him in his tracks and she goes, I told you, this isn't hard. Can we go back and have breakfast?
Oh gosh.
And so, but then I made her hunt public land last year, and we hunted all weekend and we saw one deer, and she realized very quickly that it doesn't always happen in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah. My mother is a diehard deer hunter. I mean, as hardcore, well, she used to be super hardcore with it. And I took my wife out, I want to say it was like for the first two seasons after we got married. She didn't get a license. She would just come and sit like one time a year with me. Yeah. And I think one time we saw a deer and the other time we didn't. And that was basically her experience deer hunting. Well, all growing up, my mom never let me sit with her, like, ever. She was like, everyone's too smelly, too noisy, they move too much, like, you're going to ruin my deer hunt, you're not sitting with me, type of thing.
Yeah.
And I bring my wife up to Wisconsin for the annual, you know, holiday of deer season. And my mom's like, oh, do you want to come sit with me? And I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding me. So my mom takes my wife out hunting, and opening day, within an hour, like from the start of shooting, they were already back at the house, like drinking hot chocolate and hanging out with the dead deer. And I'm like, oh man. And of course, my mom and my wife, they both come back and they're like, what have you been doing wrong this whole time? Like, this is how easy it is. Like, we were back before you were even, you know, fully awake type of deal. And I'm like, yeah. Shut up. The last thing I need is two of you trying to tell me how easy this is. And anybody can shoot one in 30 minutes. But yeah, my wife did get to get her first deer, and that was awesome. Like, getting her to experience it. She was still kind of curious. She's like, is this what you do? Like, you come and just sit on the edge of this seat, like in a tree all day long. And I'm like, yeah, isn't it great? And she's like, this is so boring. She's like, I have so many things that I could be doing right now. And I'm like, oh, well, you'll probably feel different if a giant buck steps out. But she ended up getting one and she had a ton of fun doing it. But yeah, she was just kind of confused. She's like, man, this is a lot of time that you just sit around not doing anything.
All right, guys, I need to take a quick second to tell you about a product that I've been using for quite a while now. It's called Bull Elk Beard Oil. If you've spent any amount of time in the outdoors, whether it's on the mountain, in the marsh, or in the woods, you've felt the effects of the wind, the sun, and the cold on your face. What this product does, it helps you look better, feel more confident, and it helps your beard keep its moisture. Not to mention, it smells great, so now my wife can't complain as much after I come home from a long week of elk hunting. Now, I need to tell you, I've gotten to know Brian, the founder, over the past couple months, and he is an awesome guy. Brian made sure that all of these oils are made out of clean products right here in the USA. He also loves to give back to the outdoor community, whether that's through fundraisers for public land acquisitions or even helping donate money to cover the surgery cost of duck dogs. He's an amazing guy and he makes an amazing product. So go check out bullelkbeardoil.com and be sure to check out the subscription options so that you don't have to run out of your favorite facial hair product. Plus, you can use the code NOMADIC and get 20% off your order.
I feel like until you experience the adrenaline rush and the success, though, it seems like that until you get to that payoff, you know, because it's kind of, some days it can be really boring, but then once, and I experience it even more so when I bow hunt, because there's something about, you know, when that deer's 50, 70, 100 yards away during gun season, you still get the shakes a little bit, but it's not the same as having a whitetail within 10 yards and you're like, this thing has no idea that I'm here. And you know, you can watch them or whatever and then execute what you've practiced for. So, you know, you think about, you dream about, you practice all the hours you put in for that moment, and the adrenaline rush is like no other.
Yeah, there's something totally different about it when you're sitting there, especially by yourself. I find myself like just visualizing how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there you go an hour or two without hearing or seeing anything and it can get discouraging. But then all of a sudden you just have that thought like, man, I've been here before and it can change in a minute. Like 1 minute could just change your entire day. It could change your entire deer season. And then you're just like, oh man, I hope I hear that twig snap behind me. Yeah. Or I hope I catch that glimpse out of the corner of my eye. And it gives me a new boost of energy. And I tell people, I'm like, until you're out there and you see it, you'll be there, you'll be getting discouraged. And even if you see a deer on the neighbor's property 400 yards away, it just like revitalizes you instantly and you're ready to sit for a couple more hours.
Yeah. Cause it's like you said, it can all come and go so fast. You know, how many deer can you say that you're sitting there and had no idea until maybe they were within 40 yards and you're like, holy crap, it's happening right now. Like that deer is in the thicket.
Yeah.
And you know, it comes and goes and the whole encounter is maybe less than 50 seconds from the time you see him to the time it's done. You know, one of those deer I shot 2 years ago, he came up and I was actually sending a good morning text telling my mom I was in the stand, all was good. And I looked down and no sooner than I looked back up and he was right there. And I was like, oh my, like it just all happens. And it was 60 seconds later, there was an arrow in him. It's all less than, you know,
Dude, they know when to come in. They know when to catch you off guard. Yeah. I had the same thing this last year. The doe that I shot with my bow, I don't remember if I had just switched podcast networks or I was doing something where I was like retitling and naming my podcast episodes where whatever it was. It was something to have to do with podcasting, and I was going through one episode at a time. And as I was doing it, I looked down and I think it was episode 32 I was working on, and I just hear a snap and I'm like, that wasn't a squirrel. That was like a good snap, you know? And I just barely looked down to my right, and basically right underneath my right elbow was a deer. I mean, at the base of my tree. And I'm like, what the heck, man? Like, it is crunchy out here. I thought 100% I would hear something long before it got close to me. And yeah, it was there. And I was like, I don't even know if I can move right now. And so I just started moving really slow. And it was a young doe, which was one of the things I was out there for that day. Yeah. And man, I like grabbed my bow off my left side, got my release, and I shoot a thumb release now. And so I just keep it clipped on the D loop all the time. Yeah. And so I like grabbed it, turned, and yeah, luckily I got a shot on it. Mm-hmm. And it can just change so quickly. And until you've had like those experiences, that's the rush that I chase, you know, just that random twig or the glimpse of something, or the worst sound ever is hearing a deer blow at you. But even then, sometimes it's like an adrenaline rush, 'cause you're like, they're here. Yeah. Like, at least I know they're in the area.
Yeah. And there's so many lessons to be learned from those encounters too. You know, when I can think back to what could have been the opportunity for me to shoot my first buck with my bow. I was back when I was hunting a lot of public land, and my dad and I had hiked into this spot, you know, early in the morning, carried our climbers in on our backs. And we kind of had an idea of which two trees we were going to head to. And there was one big tall oak tree, had been dropping a ton of acorns. So we were pretty sure that the deer had been moving on one of the trails through there. And then there was another one kind of down off the peninsula where you could see down into this valley off the edge of the ridge. And they'd been crossing that ridge line. Well, the oak tree was kind of the better spot for the morning, but I just kind of had a gut feeling about going down the hill. So against my better judgment, I was like, Dad, you take the oak tree and I'll go down the hill. Well, sure enough, he calls me on the radio and hey, I just smoked one, watched him go about 60 yards, pretty sure he piled up. And here I am, you know, kicking myself, because Dad's like, he walked right in, he did it. He was eating acorns at 10 yards. And I was like, man, why did I give that tree up, you know? And I'm flustered. I turn around, toss the radio down in my backpack, and I turn back around, and here's a big 10 pointer. Walk on the ridge, he's 15 yards from me, and my bow is hanging in the tree, and I'd taken my release off and was ready to get down and go help my dad. So if I'd have just stayed calm and collected, sat back down for a minute and just waited it out, we maybe could have left with two, because he was right on top of me. But threw the radio down and I just turned fast, because I was like, you get in that zone and you're like, man, why did I do that? And he was right there, and my rapid turn, he looks up at me and gone he was. So
dang, man. Yeah, that's rough. I've had plenty of moments like that, and I always have to remind myself, like, no matter what, when I'm in the tree stand, it's game time.
Yeah.
As much as it seems like it might not be, there's one person that doesn't hunt. They live like over my right shoulder on the neighboring property. And it's quite a ways from where I'm sitting, but it's close enough to where, like, if it's a calm day, if there's not a lot of wind, I can hear the conversations that they're having in their backyard.
Yeah.
And there's times when they're out there and their dog's barking and I can hear them walking around and the kids, and I'm just like, gosh, this is going to ruin my entire hunt. And right when I've kind of given up hope, I'll look to my left and a doe just bounced over the fence into the field with me. And I'm like, oh man. Like, deer are so used to people, and they know when there's a threat and when there's not.
Yeah.
Deer don't really get scared about people talking. Now, if somebody moves really fast in a treetop, they're like, that's not normal, you know. But if they're just hanging out in the backyard, deer hear that kind of junk all the time.
Yeah.
What has it been like? I know you mentioned that you and your family got like 100 acres. Mm-hmm. How long ago did that happen?
So that's been, I guess, probably about 5 years ago now. I was a junior in high school. I'm a junior in college now. So right around 5 years ish. But just kind of something my grandpa had always wanted us to have, some, you know, some ground to call ours, somewhere to go to ride four wheelers and deer hunt and just be outside. Cause we all just enjoy being outdoors, whether it's chasing turkeys or shooting squirrels in the summertime, you know, whatever. So we were fortunate enough to find a little piece of ground, and we've done some, you know, a little bit of work to help the habitat, planted some clover and built some stuff to make it recreational, but it's not the most stellar spot to deer hunt. It's a lot of rocks, a lot of ridges, but we've killed some deer off of it, and it's something to call your own. So it's a good little place for us.
Man, that's awesome. I've always said, like, I just want that place. And my wife and I have been looking at property online, you know, hoping that the prices come down a little bit still.
Yeah.
But yeah, just trying to find something. I've got a lot of friends right now that are picking up 5 and 10 acre chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And even seeing them kill deer on their own property, I'm like, see, yeah, it's so cool. And you don't have to have the biggest chunk of land. Obviously, yeah, everybody who's into the outdoors wants the biggest chunk of land, but
yeah,
I'm like, dude, give me 15 acres.
Yeah.
I'd be so pumped. I'd be so happy. I've killed deer off of little 20 acre strips before. Mm-hmm. I've watched deer, you know, every day walk through 5 acre chunks of land. And yeah, I think just to have that spot to call my own would mm-hmm. be pretty sweet.
And it's just something to call yours, and you can have a map, and, you know, these are our stands and these are our winds to hunt it, and really just like focus and hone in on a plan and not have to worry about somebody riding through on a four wheeler or somebody doing something that, you know, screws up your plan or whatever. You know, we got a big family group chat, and hey, I'm going out today. I'm going to this food plot, or I'm going to be sitting, you know, down in this creek bottom or whatever. And just to have something to know that this is ours, nobody else is going to be there, it's just us.
Yeah. How has that changed? I mean, going from hunting public land to having a chunk of your own.
It's kind of nice because I don't have to pack a stand in every day. I grew up carrying a big old climber on my back from the time I started hunting until we got this piece of ground. So it's nice to just be able to roll up, and maybe it's made me lazy a little bit in a sense of the stand's already there, so I can show up, you know, 25, 30 minutes before shooting light and just walk in and be done with it. But it's also nice to be able to strategize and have your cameras out all year and watch your bucks grow, watch, you know, your population, you know, your population control, kind of know what's there, get an idea for which deer in the area. And yeah, it's just fun to see those, you know, just kind of track the movement and the genetics. And then you can really play chess. It's kind of harder to play chess with the deer on public land, because, you know, Jim Bob from down the road could kill him and you don't ever know about it, which the same kind of thing can happen. But you talk to your neighbors more than you do the random guys that hunt public land. So we all can kind of work, you know, work it a little bit together. But we definitely have had some good deer pass through, and it's always fun and gets you kind of excited. And you're like, you know, that's my stand. Nobody else is going to that stand except for, you know, somebody in my family. So it's nice to see that kind of stuff work through and kind of get you amped up and makes you work a little harder at times to get those opportunities on some of those deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys do stuff year round on the property? Like, now that spring's coming, do you guys get out there and shed hunt and turkey hunt and morel hunt, or do you guys keep it pretty locked down until deer season?
No, we turkey hunt it quite a bit. And like I said, it's kind of recreational for a lot of my family too, because like my mom and my aunt don't come out and hunt with us. So if we just kept it all locked up all the time, they wouldn't necessarily get to use it. So we go out in the summer and we shoot, you know, shoot our guns, shoot our shotguns. We'll turkey hunt all spring, and We've got a couple of freshwater creeks that run through it with some deeper holes. So we go out and swim in the creek. We built a big pavilion out there last summer up on top of one of the ridges for campfires and barbecue and whatnot. So it's kind of a mix. And I'm sure that probably disadvantages our deer hunting a little bit, but there's also a ton of thick brush and timber all around. There's not the only field space that we have is fields that we've created by hand. So we don't mess with those a lot during the summer. You know, once turkey season's over, we kind of keep those areas locked up, and we just ride the roads on the four wheelers and kind of go out and have fun and piddle. But the heart of the farm stays kind of locked up per se.
Yeah. No, that's cool that you can kind of have different sections that you can use even when you're trying to keep pressure off of one area. I've always, on any property I'm on, I just love being out there. And so it would be very difficult for me to be like, I only use this during deer season, or like even hearing people like the Drurys or like Mark Kenyon, mm-hmm. who's kind of switched over to not really doing a ton of trail camera pulls, checking them and using that data for the next year. I'm like, man, I love trail cameras. Like, I love going and checking them. I love mm-hmm. going and pulling the card and just like, oh, please let there be a big one. All right, am I finally going to have deer in right now? Or watching the velvet and like you see all these bucks just starting to sprout, and then all of a sudden there's one with six already when everybody else is just nubs. And you're like, oh, man, who's he going to turn into? To have property that you can use for all sorts of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I make millions and millions of dollars and I can afford to only have whitetail properties and then have just waterfowl properties, I think I'll always use the property for everything.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I said that's kind of how we are. It would be, we like to be out too much and do too much to just lock it down for deer season. You know, we want to go out and hang out and just use it as a spot for us all to get together. So it's a multi-purpose property.
Yeah. Do you have any, I mean, you said turkey hunting and deer hunting,
mm-hmm.
you've got some creeks that run through. Does it hold any waterfowl at all?
No, not really. So it's kind of more central heart of the state. Sometimes the snows fly over and I'll hear them, but there's not really a flyaway for the snows. They're too crazy. They just go everywhere. So we don't get really any waterfowl other than, you know, some local geese that hang out on the golf course. It's not too far away, but that's about it.
Dude, you got to get in with the golf course owner.
Yeah.
You got to do some cleanup. I've heard of people doing that before, and I'd love to be part of that pest control.
Yeah. There's a golf course that's right by my parents' house. And I actually just met the owner a couple of weeks ago, and I've been trying to convince him that the deer are tearing his greens up too bad. And he needs to let me come do a little bit of population control. Cause I asked him, you know, when I met him, I was like, you ever have any trouble with the deer tearing up your greens? And he's like, all the time. And so I kind of tried to drop a little hint that, you know, we could help with that situation, but there's a lot of liability that goes in on that too, I'm sure. So.
Yeah. I found that, farmers are a lot more prone to give you access than business owners. I grew up right next to a tree farm, and it was a big tree farm, and the amount of bedding in there for deer, like, because they had every type of Christmas tree you can imagine, but then they had big chunks of like woods where there were pine trees so close together you couldn't even see in there. And I'm like, dude, I guarantee there's deer that hang out in there. I mean, you could see the trails where they let in there, thinking mm-hmm. about going in there and shed hunting. I'm like, dude, this is a paradise. And at one point I worked for the tree farm. So I'm like, oh, this is a shoe-in. Like, they'll definitely let me. Nope. I could not get to hunt in or get permission to hunt in there to save my life. And it drove me crazy.
Yeah.
Are you guys, being on that side of the state, is it a lot of farmland? Do you guys get a lot of crops and like cornfields, bean fields, things like that?
Not necessarily out by our hunting property, but by my house. And some of the places we hunt up here in the city do have some, because we're pretty close to like Chesterfield and St. Charles. And so those are kind of have some farm ground around them. We actually, it's kind of funny. My buddies that I waterfowl hunt with were riding around one day and found this little kind of not secluded cornfield, but it's right off the river and just outside of the Chesterfield Bottoms, which anybody that is from around here knows it's like a big strip mall. There's a Topgolf and, you know, it's very kind of industrialized area to go down to. But with it being right off the river and all these businesses have all these water features and ponds and stuff, the waterfowl like to hang out in the town. My buddies had seen some birds roosting in this farm field. And so they drove down and took the farmer a case of beer and asked him if we could hunt the last day of goose season. And we shot eight geese in one morning that were just getting up out of town and they were flying towards the river. And we put out a huge spread out in the snow. And it was one of the most fun, more fun hunts that we've had this season, just because it was like, who would think to get this close to the city to try to shoot waterfowl? But they all like the water features and stuff down in the town. So we were just trying to cut them off before they could get back to the river.
Yeah. Those spots, man, they get comfortable and they just don't worry about anything else. And sometimes you can sneak in there and get them before they get wise to your tricks. Yeah. Do you do a lot of traveling to hunt, or do you keep it pretty localized between the family farm and then where you waterfowl?
I would say I usually keep it within 2 hours for the most part. I mean, sometimes we'll make a drive up to some of those conservation areas a little further north, like Ted Shanks and up towards Columbia area, Boonville a little bit. But usually most of my drives are all within 2 hours. Head down south to Duck Creek every once in a while. But
yeah. Are you, do you have any bucket list hunts that you're wanting to do? I feel like right now is like a great time to be alive as far as knowing about different opportunities around the country. And then like the ease of access, or like putting in for points for different states, or even, dude, there are so many states that have pretty cheap non-resident tags. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about branching out and going and doing any of those big game hunts or exotic waterfowl hunts?
Yeah, so I think it'd be really fun to do an Arkansas timber waterfowl hunt if I could get down there for one. And then I want to go somewhere west, doesn't really matter to me where, and try to kill an elk. Those are two big bucket list ones for me. And I would do the elk with my bow for sure.
So, dude, elk with a bow would be nuts. I feel like everybody at this point has seen that video of the bull elk that comes in the kid, like that 13-year-old kid shoots it in the chest, like straight on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it doesn't happen that way, guys. Like that, that is, there's a reason there's only like one really well-known video like that. Yeah. But I need to experience it like with a bow in hand and elk just screaming.
Yeah.
And, you know, my hair on my neck standing on end, not knowing for sure what route they're going to come from, but just trying to get set up to get a clean shot at one. That'd be so cool. Elk hunting is a blast, even with a rifle, but I would imagine that it's compounded 20 times if you have a bow in your hand.
Yeah. I get goosebumps just like watching hunting TV here in the elk bugle. So being able to like be in the heart of the mountains and hearing them all screaming, I think would just be so much fun.
Dude, there's something different about it. And even hearing like Sika deer over in Maryland, apparently they've got a pretty wicked bugle too. They're like the Japanese deer that kind of got introduced. And there's something about vocal big game animals.
Yeah.
And I wish there were more like big game animals that just made a ton of noise and you could call to them. Like with deer, you know, you can call to them. You can do the grunting and the rattling and the snort wheezing.
Yeah.
You can even pretend to be making a scraper or rub, but they're not going to like rip a bugle, you know. Yeah. You might hear a grunt if you're lucky. A lot of people don't. You might hear them fighting in the woods, but there's something about animals that are extremely bugle and aggressive during the rut.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why, even with duck hunting, turkey hunting, elk hunting, people get hooked on it because the communication is there between you and the animal, and you can actually have that interaction and convince them to come in.
Yeah. And that's like one of the things too, that when you take a new person, like waterfowl hunting, or like try to get them into their first turkey call or their first duck call, and nobody really realizes how tough it is to get a good convincing vocalization until you put a call in their hand and they're like, you sound like that, but I sound like a party horn. Like, what is the difference? And it's all about how you can manipulate your vocals and stuff. But it's fun to have that challenge to have to learn and like try to speak the language of the animal and know, like, especially with waterfowl hunting, like what sound the ducks are making when they're feeding on the water versus when they're flying in the air, and like what calls. Cause by the time they get to, you know, sometimes even the central part of Missouri, they've heard a lot of calls coming down from Minnesota, coming across to Iowa in the northern part of Missouri. So you kind of have to change it up some days, you know, especially if you're hunting publicly, because they hear hail call after hail call as they fly over these flooded fields. So is it just a soft feed chatter? Do you try a bouncing hen? Do you hit them with just a drake whistle? Or do you just sit there? There have been a lot of mornings you don't even have to call. If you just set a decent decoy spread and you sit there and be quiet, you'll kill more ducks than when you blow a call, because they get call shy. We shot a limit on a conservation area 2 years ago. It was a full mallard limit, and it was almost all drakes. We shot two hens, and we didn't blow a call all morning.
Dang. They
got kind of lucky with being where they wanted to go, but also everybody else is trying to hammer them and break them down. And it was kind of a cold, snowy morning, so we're kind of low anyways. And we just let the motion of the water do the work, and we shot the crap out of them.
See, and that's where I've noticed, being in Missouri, that calling isn't king. You know, like, you don't have to call, even if you're a great caller. Sometimes it's better to not make noise. We saw firsthand that take place this year. Like, we were sitting there, and you know, the first group of birds that came in, we had called and we shot them, and it was great. But then all of a sudden it kind of like died down mid morning, and randomly we were sitting there talking, not really paying attention, you know, because we had one of those lulls in the morning where you just don't see much flying. And all of a sudden we look, and there's like three of them locked up, I mean, in our laps already. And it's like, hey, right here, take them. And we popped up and shot. And it's like, dude, we didn't even call. Maybe let's not call. And sure enough, there were a couple other times throughout the morning where birds snuck in on us, or we'd see them and we're like, let's just see what they do. They seem interested. And they did. Now, when I see them far out, like way out, I still always call just to try to get their attention.
But
man, when they're coming in, there's no reason to mess up a good thing. And I'll tell you right now, I am not the world's best waterfowl caller. I enjoy doing it, don't get me wrong. I would say I'm maybe a little bit better than average, but I'm not going to win any ribbons. Yeah. I'm not going to pull birds down from a mile up. Like, they have to kind of be interested already in order for me to convince them the full way.
And I'm the same way. And even with geese too, you know, they just, with us being kind of a middle state, you got to feel them out. If it's a bird that's, especially see it more with geese than ducks, but if that lead bird has already heard, a lot of times we like to say, if you can get the lead bird's attention, you can get the rest of the flock. They always like to follow whoever's in the front. But if that, you got to watch how that lead bird reacts. If you start hammering him and he starts kind of going away, maybe you just soft cluck a little bit and hit them with a flag and then just go quiet. And sometimes that's all it takes. You just got to get them to see the decoys and then don't do anything, because you're more likely to scare them away than anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the really frustrating part, is when you see ducks starting to peel off and come in, and then the lead bird is like, no, I'm going this way, and it pulls them all back up.
I
probably talk more in the blind and give people like the John Madden play-by-play more than anybody cares to hear. But I'm like, oh, we got two peeling off. Okay, never mind. They joined back up. Yeah, that one bird, let him away. And I'm like, man, if I was hunting with me, I'd probably get really annoyed. But I don't know. I just get so giddy. I can't help myself when there's birds in the air, when we've had a couple good shots, or, I mean, deer hunting, anything. I like I like keeping people up to date.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of nice sometimes to have a guy like that too, though. If you've got one guy who's whoever's the most concealed in the blind and can kind of keep an eye on them, and everybody else can just be head down and working their calls. You know, my buddies and I kind of got a system like that too, where one of us will look up and it'll just be, we've hunted enough together where we can kind of feed off of whoever's watching the birds. You know, they kind of lead the sequence and the rest of us just follow. So if they soften up, we soften up. They go hard as the birds are going away, then we kind of know to pick it up and go hard. But to have that guy that can whisper, all right, they're behind us, you know, hammer them, or they're off on the side, they're working, you know, go soft for a second. Somebody who can see and, like you said, give a play-by-play so that everybody's on the same page of what's happening. And because it always sucks too when one guy thinks you said go and he stands up and the birds are still, you know, 50 yards out, but they were going to finish right in your face. And now everybody's just trying to scramble real fast. And
oh yeah. I can't stand being the guy that's in the dark, like yeah. Not being able to see. They'll be like, oh, coming around behind us. And I wait and I wait and I wait. And I'm like, okay, what else are they doing? Like, they're not still behind us. Where are they?
Yeah. Where
they
like, go.
Give them one more pass. And it's like, which direction are they coming from? I need to know more information. But that's all right. I mean, I feel like we used to joke all the time in Colorado when I lived out there, we would always have somebody that was designated to flag the geese, right? Mm-hmm. The flag guy could never do it right. No matter what, everybody would yell at him like, flag more, flag less, put that flag down. What are you doing? You know? And it was just kind of always the running joke, like, oh man, make him be the flag guy so we can all yell at him. Yeah. And I feel like it's the same with calling. It's the same with decoys. You know,
yeah.
You set up decoys and it might be a perfect spread or what you think would be a perfect spread. But as soon as one group doesn't like it or doesn't commit, it's like, what do we do wrong? Who set up the spread? Why do we set it up that way? You know, the excuses and the finger pointing starts, but it all makes for a good time.
Yeah.
Well, man, I appreciate you hopping on with me. I can't believe it. Like it happens every time we get to an hour before it even seems like the conversation began. Yeah. But you're pretty close, man. You're not that far at all. I mean, nothing in Missouri is super far away. I feel like we need to get together and do a hunt sometime. I feel like that'd be a great time. If you're ever down in the Springfield area, we'll make it work, or we find some place, meet in the middle, hit some like really good waterfowl property or something. Yeah. Before we hop off though, I want to give you a chance to share with listeners where they can find you, where they can follow along.
Yeah. So I like to post all my hunts and just some day-to-day content on my Instagram. So it's N Herschler, H-O-E-R-C-H-L-E-R on Instagram. See some pictures of my fishing, or I like to post a lot of my fitness stuff. I work out a lot, but a lot of outdoor stuff on there too. So if looking for somebody small to go follow that's not blasting you every day, feel free.
Nice, man. Well, yeah, let's definitely stay in touch, and good luck this season. Turkey season's coming up. Do you put trail cameras out to scout turkeys?
Not necessarily as much for turkeys. I just kind of run and gun. I go out and that opening morning, hit them with a hoot, and wherever they're gobbling at, we go chase them. So I got a couple happenstance pictures because my trail cams are soft from deer season. So we pulled cars a couple weeks ago, and there's a couple toms running in some of the food plots. So that'll probably be a first spot opening morning to go hit, because they've been coming down and feeding some of that clover. So we'll try to break them off the roost and get them in the field. But if not, we'll hit the timber and we'll go find them.
Nice. I typically put trail cameras back out if I don't already have them out. I'll put them back out and get ready for turkey season just to see if I can get them patterned. And I haven't done it this year. So I'm going to be out near the property tomorrow. So I'm going to put them out tomorrow and hopefully, fingers crossed, something will pop up and I can get them figured out before opening day.
Yeah.
Well, man.
Good luck.
Yeah. Good luck to you. Thanks again for hopping on, and good luck the rest of the season.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that is going to wrap it up for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I had a ton of fun chatting with Nick, and it's always good to talk to fellow Missourians and get their take on what hunting is like here in the Show Me State. Now, I'm looking forward to getting out and hunting this next year with some of these people, getting together. Maybe I really do just need to lock down a central location where I can have a ton of my guests, a ton of podcast listeners together. We can hang out, share stories, do like a game cook-off or something like that. Maybe some shooting competitions. I don't know. We're going to turn it into an amazing event. And I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing about me talking about these get-togethers when they haven't happened yet. But I promise they are coming, maybe right before this fall, right before all the seasons kick off. Maybe we'll just do a giant like outdoor kickoff. That's what we're going to, I'll find a catchy name for it. Anyways, Nick is a super awesome dude, and it sounds like he has a ton of success up there in northeastern Missouri. And I just look forward to connecting with him, going out on the hunt. A lot of these guys recently have been phenomenal dudes, and they've been pretty close. And I've got a lot more somewhat local, I guess, neighboring state guests lined up. And so, yeah, there's so many opportunities here in Missouri, and there's so many different types of hunting. Like, I talked to a guy who is super into woodcock hunting, and he's like one of the foremost people on woodcock hunting in the country, or at least in the state. And I met him like dove hunting. I would have never guessed that woodcock hunting was a thing, but there's a lot of opportunities here that I think I'm still missing out on. And I'm sure you guys have the same thing in your neck of the woods. So hopefully you guys are getting out there, finding different passions and pursuits that maybe you didn't know about before, diving into more research on what is available to you through your state agencies. But anyways, hopefully you're getting out, enjoying turkey season. Maybe it's already over for you. Maybe you've already tagged out, or you're still waiting on that first bird. Either way, until next time, always choose adventure, and God bless.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.